Welcome to The Reiki Show, hosted by Reiki authors Bronwyn and Fran Steiner, founders of the International House of Reiki. Find out more at www.reiki.net.au. Hi, my name is Bronwyn.
And my name is Franz.
And today we have with us Gary Kaganoff, who is an Australian Reiki practitioner, but he's also a wilderness explorer for about 20 years. He's been doing that, and then he went on to study a master's in social ecology with a specific interest in eco-psychology. And if you don't know what that is, I'm sure he's going to tell us. He's also a filmmaker. So welcome, Gary.
Thank you very much.
Gary, could you please just tell us a little bit about what got you involved in looking at the environment and becoming focused on ways of supporting the environment and letting people know about what's happening out there?
Yes, I started off, like a lot of boys, in Scouts when I was a kid. And we did a lot of things outdoors, went camping and hiking. And I just loved, you know, the adventures and the adventure of climbing mountains and exploring the forests and things like that. And I carried that into my early adulthood, and me and my friends just went exploring. We had huge, fantastic experiences in Tasmania, where we'd spend weeks, months at a time out in the wilderness in Tasmania, which just, you know, we were just, it was our, pretty much our rite of passage expeditions that we'd do. And, but it was all at that time very much wanting to climb mountains and wanting to be the best and improving ourselves and things like that. But over time, and as I grew older in my mid-20s and early 30s, it turned more into not just an egotistical conquering of mountains, it turned into a journey of the soul through the landscapes of the soul. And that's when I became aware of our interconnection with the landscapes. So from all those experiences that I did, I loved taking photographs. And this led me then to video, and I started making films about the wilderness and our experiences out there, and also the destruction that's going on as well. So I wanted to highlight that and inspire people to get out into the wilderness.
At what point did you actually study Reiki?
When I left Sydney and moved up to the Blue Mountains. I needed a change, a sea change, I guess. Of course, I'd spent so much time out in the bush that I just couldn't stand the city anymore, and the Blue Mountains was a great option. So I was always wanting to do it. I've heard about it, but I was a bit discriminating on who I would do it with. I kind of felt in and thought, no, that teacher's not for me. I'm not that teacher. Then when I met Penelope, it was like, wow, I want to do it with you. And I was drawn to her. And then I left it for a while, and then I suddenly came back to it, started coming back, and it made a bit more sense. I started to feel the energies a bit more. Then I met a guy in Katoomba here who was a master. He said, would you like to do your master's? And I said, yep, I like you. I'll do that, I'm ready. And that was pretty much a 7-year process of doing that and being drawn to particular people.
What did you find that the Reiki did to what you were already doing? Did it help you at all with finding out about how things worked in the environment or your connection with them?
Yes, it made me more sensitive to the energies in the environment. So working with the energies within myself, the specific subtle energies, and watching them shift and move, it helped actually explain to me why, when I went into the wilderness, I was drawn to particular places and then not drawn to other places, like I'd avoid other places. So it was, I was then becoming aware when I knew Reiki that there's a light energy there and there's a dark energy there. So it's intuitive, even if you don't know Reiki at all or any other modality like that. You can go into the bush, and if you're so aware and intimate with the wilderness, you can actually navigate by these energies, and you can weave your way in and out of these energies through the light and the dark and the dark and the light. Like 50% of attention on yourself and your own energies, you can feel what happens to your own energies. For example, you might really crave to be out in the forest and be in the trees. Okay, so you go out there. And if you sit and just feel the energy of that forest and feel the energy inside of yourself, you can have a healing. at the same time, you might crave to go out in the desert and do the same thing. And you might walk into a dried-up creek or something. This could be, you know, there's an energy there that you have linked into with your own energy as well. So it's an attraction of energies, of similar energies, just like in people. You know, souls attract souls, like attracts like. So it's the same in the landscape. And it's not just us taking from the environment of that energy, it's us giving back our energy to that. So it's reciprocal. It's reciprocal energy. So it's just like working with a client. Just like working with a client that we have on the table, and we pick up these subtle energies. And once they merge, once we work with them, they shift. It goes to a higher level if you're working from the heart.
When you do that and when you're in the forest, do you notice as well, for example, you talked before that about the destruction you see in a forest. What do you feel and what happens when you see this destruction?
Yeah, I felt, and a lot of other people, environmental activists I've worked with in protecting forests, down, especially down in Tasmania, when we're there for a long time, we're actually, you know, trying to stop the bulldozers and trying to stop the roads going through and things like that. And when you're there long enough, you can actually connect with the spirits of the landscape. Incredible, the, you know, the energy there in these landscapes, particularly strong in Tasmania. And you actually feel them disappearing. You actually feel them being subdued and perhaps being pushed down. You might feel at first that they're going to disappear, but I don't think that's right. I think they're just being covered over. And they will come back, you know, when the right time happens. So, yeah, that caused a lot of grief for a lot of activists who spend a lot of time in the forests and in the mountains of Tasmania, that they were scared that it was all going to disappear. But I'm pretty optimistic that it just lies covered over.
And it will come back one day.
Yeah. And we can help it come back too. Because if we just sit in the Clefell forest full of love and light, the energy will go into the environment, into the landscapes.
So how do you think we can help the environment by practicing Reiki? What does it make a difference?
The difference is that we can learn to respect the environment, go beyond, look at the environment beyond our skin. And beyond our skin, our psyche projects into the landscape. So the landscape is part of our psyche. So if we can understand that, then we have no reason to actually hurt it, because if we're hurting it, we're hurting our psyche. And same with the soul. Our souls are connected. Our souls are part of the soul of the earth. So if we're hurting the environment, we're hurting our own soul. And you can just look at it in society today, in our culture. It's almost soulless. So if we go out into the environment with absolute integrity and respect, we can't fail to exchange energies with the landscape. I see my work as, if we're healing nature, we can heal ourselves. And if we heal ourselves, we're also healing nature. So we don't need to go out into the wild wilderness to actually do that. We can do it in our rooms, in our meditation rooms or in our Reiki rooms. But the more you get towards the love and the light, the more the environment will heal and return back to its equilibrium that it is, which is made up of darkness and lightness.
So you're saying too that we first of all, as well within ourselves, we need to discover that connection, what we have with the natural elements. So most of the time we feel very disconnected, and I think that's why we cut down all the trees and create roads, because we think it doesn't really matter. But if we find that disconnectedness within ourselves, we rediscover that we're actually connected with the natural elements,
then
as well we're going to look differently at the nature, and we're actually going to support the natural growth and not destroy it.
Yes. I think what stops us, our culture, from doing this is fear. We're a very fear-based society. We seem, everything you look at is based on fear, politics, you know, everything like that. And so So there's a fear that's stopping people from going out into the bush. Oh my God, what happens if I get bitten by a snake or a spider, or I might die of, you know, standing in the rain or something. But if you look under that fear, it's irrational. It's totally irrational. It's against our nature to be fearful like that. So it's all about confronting our own fears, getting past the ego, putting the ego aside, getting out of the way of ourselves to actually immerse ourselves in nature. So it's like giving a Reiki session to somebody on the table in your room. You have to put your ego aside and just use your intuition and just go with the flow. You just go and see what happens. All you need is your heart and your hands, and you leave your ego aside. And whatever happens, happens.
Absolutely.
So getting beyond this fear. Yeah.
There's a lovely story about Francis of Assisi. He was walking around and he came near his village, and his village was all in panic because there was a wild animal in the forest, and it ate the sheep and it attacked people. Mm. And so Francis of Assisi said, oh, I'll go into the forest. And they all said, no, no, don't go. You know, it's scary and it might eat you or hurt you. But because Francis of Assisi didn't have the fear, he walked into the forest, and there was the wild animal.
Yeah.
And a wild animal saw Francis of Assisi, and the wild animal just sat down and licked his hand and was very passive. And so Francis of Assisi talked to the wild animal and said, well, if you stop hurting the sheep and the people, I actually will go around and beg for food, and I will bring you the food myself so that you stop hurting the people. And that's what happened. And I think that only happened because Francis of Assisi dealt with his own fear and insecurities.
Yes. There's a similar story with Buddha as well. In one of his previous incarnations before Buddhahood, he walked into the forest and tamed the huge six-headed demon or something. And the demon let him through the forest because he confronted his fear. And confronting our fear is the first step on the spiritual path, or one of the first steps on the spiritual path. Transforming the immature ego into the mature ego is one of the best things we can do. And simply by doing that, we can stop wars, we can stop all the crap and the bullshit that's going on in the world, and learn to begin to love each other and the environment. I have an issue with the New Age movement that it sort of puts aside all the darker aspects of the spiritual path, going into the underworld and confronting the demons. I think the New Age movement always seems to be going for the love and the light all the time. But you have to confront the fears going into the darkness. And this is where we gather our strength. And once you confront the darkness, the light automatically comes up. It's automatically there. It has to balance itself out.
That's absolutely.
The universe, yeah. So that's Jungian psychology, and that's where eco-psychology fits into it too, and transpersonal psychology. It supports you on going deeply into your fears, and as deeply as you can go. And, you know, that leads, of course, probably as we know, into dark night of the soul stuff, confronting the devil and and all those amazing things. So same thing in the environment. You can use the environment for that same thing of confronting your fears. I do a lot of rock climbing, abseiling. How does it feel to stand on the edge of the cliff? Sure, you're safely hooked in with a rope, but what's it feel like to stand right on the edge of the cliff? It's damn scary. But you have an energy within you that you can use to actually hold yourself balanced, centered, and confront that fear because it's irrational.
And what is eco-psychology?
Eco-psychology is, as I said, where your psyche extends out into the landscape. So if you do have an attraction with a particular type of landscape, like you love the ocean or you really love the mountains or love the forest, you have a psychic connection with that particular landscape. So if you go into that landscape regularly, you can actually work with that part of the psyche unconsciously, and it becomes conscious, and work with energies. You can sit in the forest and you can do your Reiki, you can do meditation. Just sit and be, and using your witness to actually look at what's happening. So if something scary comes up, you're not going to run away because of your ego. You can sit and watch it with your witness, that part of you that just watches. And I'm sure a lot of Reiki practitioners are developing that in their work. They just watch what happens. And that can help transform your psyche. I've sort of measured my life, not in age or years, but in type of landscapes that I've evolved through. When I was younger, it was always mountains, wanting to get to the top. I was a mountain man. And then in my mid-20s to mid-30s, I was very much attracted to forests. And I spent my life, those 10 years, journeying through forests up and down rivers. And then after a while, I really felt my soul needed to go to the desert. So I spent some time in the desert. So there's this evolution of landscapes that actually was within you. I think my mantra is, the soul of the landscape mirrors the landscapes of the soul. When you're pursuing the truth of nature, you're also pursuing the nature of truth. So there's that reciprocal aspect to it.
So in reality, it's all about oneness.
Ah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's a point where we become the landscape, become the environment, become the leaves, become the animals. You know, it's all linked back to shamanism and all the animistic traditions, indigenous traditions. This is how they worked with their psyches, you know, and they were healthy people. Sure, they had wars and, you know, cannibalism and all that kind of stuff. And they had the darkness. They also had the light, and they worked with it. And because we have forgotten our connection to the wilderness, we see so much mental and psychic sickness in our culture because we have disconnected ourselves from the landscape and the archetypes and the symbols that are within us in a Jungian sense. If we work with our dreams, even, we, you know, we tap into that as well, into that, in the archetypal energies. Archetypes are simply energies as well. Everything's an energy. Emotions are energies. That's why we as Reiki practitioners can work with these energies. And we can't do anything wrong as long as we're in the heart and we trust and leave the ego behind.
You also take people on vision quests. What do you do there?
We give people the opportunity to actually deconstruct themselves. Like I said, get out of the way of their ego. So if we take people out of society, take them away from their mobile phones and their television and their computers and everything for at least a week, it gives them a chance to actually get to know themselves very deeply, as deeply as they wish to go, and to see what lies underneath. So it's an opportunity to take them out into the wilderness, into a completely foreign place, out of their comfort zones, and watch themselves. So we give them tools like meditation and developing witness to help them to watch what's going on inside of them very deeply. And they might be attracted to a particular place. We spend maybe a day or two on a solo. So we put them out by themselves into a particular place. We as the facilitators look after the safety, physical, mental, emotional safety, but they have the opportunity to be by themselves in the landscape and see what comes up. And it's always the darkness that comes up. There's always darkness. So they always go deeply into the underworld, whether they dip a toe in or they dive head first in, they have an experience of that. And at the bottom of that is soul. So when they get through and walk through that darkness, soul arises. So it's an opportunity for them to really get into the transpersonal aspects of themselves, or the transpersonal aspects of the forces of the universe, really.
Fantastic. So if people would like to contact you about these vision quests or your work you do, where can they contact you?
I've also got another website called landscapesofthesoul.com, which they might like to have a look at, and that can explain a bit more about the eco-psychology and some of the trips I've been doing.
Briefly before you go, I'd just like to know a little bit about the films that you've been making, because I understand that they've also been influenced by the experiences that you've had in your life.
Yeah, I did 10 years of environmental filmmaking for environment groups, especially in Tasmania, to help save particular places. At that time, I didn't quite know how to put my spirituality into these films, besides, you know, the heart and soul that goes into making a film. But now I'm moving more towards spiritual-orientated films. I did a film, my first one on television, was about a guy who lost his legs above the knee in an accident. And he was one of my friends that I went out into the wilds with before he had his legs. And then when he lost his legs, he still had the urge and the spirit to actually wanting to get out there. And so he spent 28 days crawling his way on short prosthetic legs up and down one of the hardest bushwalks in Australia to Federation Peak in Tasmania. You might have seen it on the ABC. And it was an incredible story of, you know, courage and tenacity and you know, going against the odds. And so it was a story about his spirit and his need to reconnect with the environment and not be held back by the chains of society that say, you know, you should be in a wheelchair all your life. Then the one I'm working on at the moment is from Afghanistan. I went to Afghanistan a couple of years ago, and that was a huge emotional journey for me, and it sort of changed my life in ways that I never expected. And so that's going to be coming out soon, and hopefully on Compass on the ABC. And that's more a search for peace. You know, how can we really search for peace? We fail if we at peace if we just sign documents on a table agreeing that we won't promise not to hurt each other again. That's not peace. Peace is really finding the peace within your heart and your soul. And so this is what this film's all about.
Thank you so much for sharing, Gary. That was important for us to realize too, that we first need to find inner peace within ourselves, because if we don't have the peace within ourselves, how can we create real peace in the world?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you for sharing.